Okay, good morning, everyone. Thanks for tuning in to Moms Fighting Autism. I'm your moderator, Nancy Bernatitis. I have a 13-year-old son with autism and have been very active in the autism community since he was diagnosed at the age of 4. I've served as president of the Autism Society of America Dayton chapter. I've worked as the assistive technology specialist for Goodwill Easter Seals, and I'm a regular contributor to Autism Today. There are two ways to listen to today's webinar. You can log in to www.momsfightingautism.com. The webinar is completely free. Once you're registered, you'll see a blue box in the upper left-hand corner of the screen. There you can click Listen In and hear the discussion via the Internet. Click Ask a Question if you'd like to submit a question for our speaker. You can also listen in by phone by calling 949-333-4806 and enter conference ID number 168978#. All callers are immediately muted, so don't worry about any background noises. We can't hear you. Later in our webinar, I'll let telephone listeners know how they can ask a question directly to our presenter if they wish. We do try to get to as many of the questions and the common themes as we can in the time that we have, but at the end, we'll let you know how to contact the presenter directly if you have any additional questions. When the slideshow begins, Internet users can go to their blue box and click Slides to view the slideshow. It does take a moment to connect, so don't worry, it will connect. Once the slides are up, you can synchronize the slides with either your phone or the webcast audio by clicking the button at the bottom of the slideshow. Mute your computer if you are listening via phone so you don't get an echo. We do have an extra little tab on our little blue box today. We have an embedded video in our slideshow, and when you're prompted, you can click that red, I think it says, click here to view the video. Yeah, sensory video, click here. So when you're prompted, you will click there and a new box will open up. It'll take you to YouTube where you can view the video, and then just close that box when you're done viewing the video, and we'll go back to the slideshow. Today we are talking about raising a sensory smart child, practical solutions for real life challenges with Lindsay Beal. And I'll tell you a little bit about Lindsay. Lindsay is an OTRL, and she is the co-author of the award-winning Raising a Sensory Smart Child, the definitive handbook for helping your child with sensory processing issues, with a foreword by Dr. Temple Grandin, published by Penguin Books. An expanded version was published in 2009 by Penguin Books with a new section on the sensory challenges and autism. She is an occupational therapist based in New York City, where she evaluates and treats children, adolescents, and young adults with sensory processing issues, developmental delays, autism spectrum disorders, and other challenges. Lindsay specializes in remediating fine and gross motor delays, visual perceptual skill development, enhancing daily living skills, and improving sensory processing issues. She also helps families and schools to make simple modifications at home and school to enhance a child's ability to play, learn, and thrive. Lindsay writes articles for both professional and parenting publications and is a columnist for Autism Asperger Digest magazine. She is the co-creator of the Sensory Processing Masterclass DVD program. She runs the SensorySmarts.com website and has several free web presentations online. She is a popular speaker teaching workshops to parents, therapists, doctors, and others on practical solutions for developmental challenges and sensory strategies at home, school, and in the community. You can go to her website at www.SensorySmarts.com. Welcome, Lindsay.
Hello, I'm so happy to be here. You know, I work with kids and young adults with a wide variety of diagnoses, including autism. And my clients get a lot of therapies, including speech and sometimes physical therapy, plus ABA or DIR floor time, teach, and other educational approaches. And all of these approaches work best when any underlying sensory problems are taken into account. That's why we all need to work together. The OT needs to know what the PT is working on so she can support those goals, and the behaviorist needs to know what the OT is working on so she can reduce the impact of noxious sensory input in her sessions. So everyone needs to work together and support the families and the classroom teachers, particularly when it comes to the issue of sensory problems. This session will demystify sensory processing challenges and give you some practical sensory smart tools that you can use right away. Now, the book that I co-wrote with the parent of a child that I used to treat through early intervention is called Raising a Sensory Smart Child, but I do want to clarify that it's not just for kids and it's not just for parents. The strategies, the underlying information applies to people of all ages who have sensory processing issues. And it's a popular book with parents, with teachers, with therapists, with doctors. It's a great way to explain the sensory-based problems and behaviors that a child or a young adult is exhibiting. So it applies to everyone, not just to young children. So I'm going to start with some basic definitions. We first learn about and understand the world through our senses. Sensory processing is the neurological process by which we transform the information provided by all the sensations coming from within our bodies and the environment into meaningful messages. It's something we do without thinking. Because the person with sensory challenges has a nervous system that's wired up in an unusual way, the person does not take in and use the sensory input the same way that the rest of us might do. So they don't always have accurate, reliable information about their bodies and the environment. Now, because the person with sensory problems has a nervous system that's wired up in a different way, they really can struggle quite a lot in everyday life. A person can struggle with information from just one sensory system, such as vision or hearing, or more typically can have trouble processing input simultaneously. And we're going to talk more about that soon. Sensory processing problems affect a lot of different kinds of people with a lot of different kinds of diagnoses, as well as people who really have no official diagnosis. There's just these sensory issues, and in that case, it's sensory processing disorder alone. But I do want to clarify that sensory processing issues are the most prevalent and the most severe in people with autism. Almost everyone on the autistic spectrum has some degree of sensory processing problem, sometimes extremely severe. I'm going to show you a little video, What is Sensory Processing Disorder, and you're going to click on that YouTube link.
So this is where everyone would click on their little red link, and it'll take you to the video. Okay, everyone can close that box and go back to your slides.
Okay. So, obviously, I love that little video, and I think it gives a really simple, great explanation of how the sensory problems can manifest. Quickly reviewing the senses, I know we all think about five senses, but really there are seven. Although I suppose if you believe in ESP, there are eight, or perhaps even more. But looking at the basic seven, there is touch, and that includes light touch, deep pressure, like a deep massage, vibration, temperature, and pain. Vision is not only our ability to see things, it's the ability of our eyes to work together for a single vision, as well as our ability to watch an object as it moves through space, as well as to keep the space stable as we move our bodies. There's the auditory sense is not just hearing, it's also listening. Hearing is a passive process. Listening is a very active process. Taste and smell are pretty obvious. The vestibular system refers to movement and gravity, and the receptors for the vestibular system are based in the inner ear. Proprioception is how we know where our bodies are without looking. It's an internalized body map. That's how you know, that's how you can tie your shoelaces without looking at your fingers. So all of these sensory systems work together to give us a good picture of our world and our place in it. Now, people can be... There are really three ways of relating to the senses. I don't like to categorize people, but there's the oversensitive person or hypersensitive person, and this person is going to be, it's like the volume control is up too loud, and as a result, the person might be a bit of a sensory avoider, may tend to be meticulous and a little bit solitary. Then there's the undersensitive or hyposensitive child who needs more input for it to really register. This person may be difficult to get alerted and oriented and may not read social cues well. And to compensate, they may rev up and become a sensory seeker. Finally, the most common presentation is mixed reactivity. And this is where the nervous system is inconsistent. The person with mixed reactivity may seek some sensation and avoid others, and it can change from hour to hour, day to day, and can be related to environmental and social context, stress, food, how well the person has slept, whether the person has allergies, that kind of thing. Now, quite often, the person with sensory challenges will do just fine in a familiar, low-stimulation environment, such as at home. It's environments with more complex demands for processing that can be problematic, and the problems can range from being a little uncomfortable to being so overwhelmed that the person has a total meltdown or even a sensory whiteout. Let's consider the supermarket. What's happening in a supermarket? There are the sights. There's fluorescent, flickering, bright lighting that the person can see and hear. There's glare on the walls and floors. There are a lot of crowded visual fields. The sounds. There are people talking, shopping carts rolling around, humming lights, humming refrigerated cases. Touch. There's the feeling of the cart handle and having to handle the groceries and all the weird temperature differentials that happen. It can be very cold in the produce aisle, for example. There's lots of different smells of the food. There's often a scent of ammonia-based cleaning products, perfumes from other people, perfumed products. There's a lot of different smells that neurotypical people can usually just kind of filter out, and it doesn't bother them quite so much. Thinking about the taste, we know that people with sensory issues are often very selective eaters, and just seeing certain foods in the supermarket can make that person gag. Then, of course, there's constant demands to move, navigate through crowded aisles, reach up, bend over to lower shelving, and everything moves so fast. So, you know, going into an environment like this is kind of like, I use a paper plate analogy. You go to a picnic and you have a paper plate and you put on a little chicken salad and it's fine. And then you put on a little coleslaw and it's fine. But then you put on a little potato salad and the whole plate falls apart when you put too much stuff into the processing system. Let's say the paper plate of the brain. If you put on too much, it can just fall apart. And what are you going to do when you're completely barraged by sensory input? Well, you're going to act out or tune out. And sometimes that includes some really intense stimming. All right, we think of stims as non-purposeful behaviors. But from a sensory perspective, it actually is a purposeful behavior. There are lots of reasons why people stim. We all do it to some extent when we chew gum, tap our fingers on a tabletop, or even clear our throats when we're a little nervous. But people on the spectrum with sensory problems do it more intensely and often much more obviously. Stims can rev up a sluggish, hypoactive nervous system. Stims can self-soothe if the person is feeling overwhelmed. Stims can block out overwhelming sensory input, such as you or the teacher or a crowded classroom or whatever super busy environment is out there. A stim can help to get the person back inside of him or herself and get a sense of comfort. So finally, stims release endogenous opioids to make the person feel better. That's a natural high that happens. So it's actually really, really purposeful. And the thing is that if you try to take the stim away, usually another one crops up. So, you know, you stop the hand flapping, and then maybe the person might start humming. So the key is to eliminate the cause of the stims if possible. And to replace it with a more acceptable behavior like chewing gum or a non-food chewy instead of, let's say, chewing on a hand or a piece of clothing. I'll show you some of the replacements that I use in a few moments. Okay, so our goal as therapists and as parents is to help the person struggling with these sensory experiences to not be overwhelmed by all of the sensory input out there. Not over-aroused, not under-aroused, but in the optimal state of arousal, that just right state of mind that enables a person to face up to the ups and downs and emotional, physical, and intellectual challenges of everyday life. That is my puppy there on the bottom. And he's learning how to deal with all the sensory input and not to be overwhelmed. So going back to that supermarket, this may mean going there only when it's least crowded or making sure that the person who's always overwhelmed in that supermarket is wearing earplugs and maybe sunglasses to protect them from intolerable visuals and noises. And we'll talk more about those compensations soon. Now, a lot of you may already be working with occupational therapists. But if you're not already, the place to start is by getting an occupational therapy evaluation with a focus on sensory issues. Not all OTs focus on sensory issues. Some of us are really great with handwriting, and some are great with orthopedic issues or mental health issues or physical rehabilitation, these kinds of things. So you want someone who specializes in this. The Sensory Smarts website has a link that will help you find an OT in your area if you do not already have access to one. You can also go to the Sensory Smarts website and print out the sensory checklist. It's on the Signs of SPD page, and you can fill that out for your child, or if you're a therapist who's new to this stuff, for a child that you're treating, teachers for kids in your classroom, you can go to the Working with Schools tab at my website and print out the student checklist. Parents, you are going to start to analyze triggers and keep a behavior journal. You want to really write down which day, which behavior occurred, in what condition, what you think may have triggered it, what your child ate, what was going on, and so you can start to look for patterns. So keeping a behavior journal is essential. And then you want to start to think about what you can change and what you need to accommodate. For example, with the supermarket, do you need to change the requirement that the person go to the supermarket at all? Can you go at a less crowded time? Can you go for shorter trips, not the big weekly shopping? So those are changes. And then the accommodations would be having the person wear earplugs, having the sunglasses, having a baseball cap on, because that gets rid of the glare from the downcast lighting. So you want to start to look at those things, and an OT can help you to do that. Now, how OT works, for people who are not already familiar, is that an OT gives specific, repeated, simultaneous, multisensory stimulation. And why do we do that? Why is the OT, again, having the person bounce on a ball and play catch and listen to music yet again? There's a lot of repetition here. That is because nerves that fire together wire together. So what your OT is trying to do is rewire the person's brain, because the brain is plastic and is capable of change, so that the brain can and the body can process a sensory input in a more beneficial way. Now, while the OT is working on increasing the person's ability to process this input in a better way, she or he will also develop and help you to implement a personalized sensory diet of activities with the goal of maintaining that optimal level of arousal. Sometimes I'll just call it a home program or a school program. And these are very customized activities that help that particular person to find the comfort level within his own body so that he can function optimally. Now, there's a huge section on sensory diets in our book, Raising a Sensory Smart Child, and on the sensorysmarts.com website. I'll review some of the most effective activities here. The most important, most organizing, most regulating sensory diet activities tend to be those that involve movement and heavy work that is done by the big muscles of the body. So, these include bouncing, jumping, pushing things, pulling things, banging, crashing, throwing, pounding, hanging upside down. Those are big, deep muscle, heavy work kinds of movements. So, some things that are great for kids of all ages and adults. Riding a bicycle is wonderful. Doing Pilates, doing brain gym exercises, yoga class or even a yoga DVD, and there are DVDs out there for all different levels of ability. Dancing. I love to just put on some music and dance with a child or a young adult, and it really gets the body and the brain kind of well-lubed, and everyone's happy, and the person is reorganized from that. Using gym equipment is wonderful. Those elliptical machines, the Stairmaster, just some simple weightlifting is great if you don't have access to a gym. You can go into the kitchen and grab some cans of soup or whatever cans you have and use those as weights. Those can be just really simple things to do that ground the person in his or her body. Climbing stairs is fabulous. I live in Manhattan, and I will have families, if they're not using strollers, climb the stairs instead of taking the elevators. Makes a big difference. It really gets into the big muscles of the body, and it can be very calming and good aerobic exercise. Climbing ladders, things on the playground are fabulous in terms of getting some heavy work and movement in there. Cleaning, washing tabletops, and that could be at home or in a center or at school. Cleaning counters and windows, vacuuming and mopping are all really good heavy work activities. Jumping is very important. Jumping jacks are great. I use jumping jacks in schools to help kids transition between activities. If the person has not yet reached that coordination level of that kind of military jumping jack, you can just have the person do a jumping jack with feet apart together, maybe add on the hands apart together and coordinate it that way. I love mini trampolines. They're for the little ones. You can have a mini trampoline with a safety bar. They're also rebounders for older people. And again, it really grounds you in your body and gets you comfortable and ready to face the challenges of the day. Other fun toys and activities. Spinning toys are just wonderful. If the person is not overwhelmed. Okay, so before I even go on here, spinning is really intense for a lot of people with sensory issues. The hyper responsive person, the spinning can be overwhelming. So you're not going to just take the person and put them on the spinning equipment and say, you know, feel better, reorganize. It doesn't work that way. If the person has some vestibular issues, you're definitely going to want to work with the OT on this for how to use the spinning equipment in particular in a safe and therapeutic way. But I do want to show you a couple of nice things that can be done. There's something called astronaut training, and that's a program, a vestibular, visual, and auditory program that therapists use and might be appropriate for the person in question. But then there are things like the Dizzy Disc Junior. That's on the upper left of that slide. And that's a wonderful rotating toy that works like a Lazy Susan. It can handle up to 150 pounds. Again, you're not going to allow unlimited access to that toy. It's to be used in a way that is safe, efficient, safe, effective, and you'll want to work with an OT on how to use that in a way that will be beneficial.
Lindsay, I'm sorry to interrupt. It's Nancy.
Yeah.
My slide isn't advancing.
Oh.
I'm still on the heavy work. I just want to make sure. Okay,
how's that?
There we go.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay, sorry about that. Okay, so now we're on the correct slide. So that is the Dizzy Disc Junior on the upper left and that I talked about. On the middle right is the Sit and Spin. That might be the more familiar vestibular toy that you may have seen or used when you were a child. And today's Sit and Spins tend to have a lot of bells and whistles, and there's a Dora the Explorer one that gives directions in Spanish. It can be really overwhelming, so I usually take the batteries out, so it's just the vestibular input that's going on. Oh, the indoor and outdoor swings. Outdoor swings, if your child or you can handle the all the multisensory input of the playground, obviously outdoor swings are great. The indoor swings can be installed in your own home, basement, maybe something that needs to be worked on in an OT gym. And slowly work towards for the person who is hyper-reactive. There's lots of great toys out there for kids and adults that help to get the heavy work in, like the Zoom ball in the lower left. Pocketful of Therapy, PFOT.com, has a great Zoom ball right now, and that's a wonderful toy that you propel back and forth on two ropes. There's two handles on either end. It's great exercise and great grounding work. There's also, I play balloon tennis for kids and adults who are working on that eye-hand coordination. We blow up balloons. Usually I like to use punch balls because they're a little bit more durable. Blow up the balloons, and then we play tennis with small rackets. All kinds of non-competitive ball activities are good heavy work. Wheelbarrow walking with hands held, great stuff. So that's just a taste of the heavy work and movement activities that I like to do. And you can go to the website and find more sensory diet activities. And I've written several related articles on this topic that you can find on the Sensory Smarts website that were initially published in the Autism Asperger's Digest magazine. Tactile sensitivity, a big issue for people on the spectrum. You know, remember that there's a difference between firm touch versus light touch. So a light caress actually triggers the protective pathways of the nervous system, whereas firmer touch triggers different kinds of receptors. So in general, you want to use a firmer touch. And so, you know, you can tell a teacher that, or an in-law that, or the bus driver, you know, no light touches because it really upsets my child, or, you know, my young adult child. Please use a firmer, reassuring touch. If you've ever had a massage, and I hope that you have, and I hope that you will, because you deserve one, if you've ever had a bad massage, that was a light touch massage, and it's not fun. It's very, I find it very upsetting. You want a good, firm, deep touch. Some other activities you'll see on the upper right, a therapy brush. I know we're not supposed to call it that, but that's what it's commonly called. There is the Wilbarger protocol, and that's doing the therapeutic brushing every 2 hours. Work with an OT on that to learn how to do it. Make sure you're doing it the right way. I like to personalize those brushes. So this I made for a little girl who loves My Little Pony, and this way it's her pony brush, and it's not some peculiar thing that she does. It's just her pony brush. So some other great activities to reduce some of the tactile sensitivity is, I call it burrito, and I have the person roll themselves up in a blanket, a weighted blanket, or even a thin therapy mat or yoga mat, and they roll themselves up in that, and it's kind of like swaddling for big kids or adults, and it gives that nice, firm, sustained, deep pressure that so many people with sensory issues, and particularly with autism, crave. So that's the burrito. You always want to be able to see the person's face, watch their expression. Are they enjoying themselves? Are they uncomfortable? Are they panicking? You really want to monitor this stuff. I also love to do sandwiches with kids, and with older kids also enjoy it. And I'll usually use sofa cushions as the bottom layer of bread. And you could make it gluten-free bread. That's fine. And the child can be peanut butter or bologna or, you know, chicken roll, whatever the kid likes. And I sort of give them a deep pressure massage on top of the bottom piece of bread, and then we'll add on some cheese if the person likes, and we'll add on pickles, and I'll usually do some percussion that's kind of like drumming on their body, giving them all kinds of different tactile input. It's fun. And then we take another sofa cushion and put that on top as the top piece of bread, and then I'll usually squish out the extra. And that's some really good sustained deep pressure again. And you can use your whole body weight if the person is craving a lot of input. Again, I'm always looking at the person's face. I want this to be a pleasurable experience. I'll often get a huge amount of eye contact during this activity. So that's a really good thing. You always want to explore textures. There's a tendency for the hypersensitive person to just avoid touching things, but you want to get into sensory bins. The little guy on the lower left is in a Sterilite bin full of dry rice and beans. Obviously, you're not going to put a person who is going to eat those things into that kind of bin, but it's that kind of sensory bin exploration with bare feet and hands is a really good way to get some desensitization of the hands going. You might, with this little guy, had to start with just throwing toys into the bin and then picking out toys gingerly and then burying the toys and finding those toys, that kind of thing. So sensory bins are great, using Play-Doh. That's my fun factory, kind of in the middle of the slide. One of my personal favorite toys, getting in there, squeezing the Play-Doh, softening it up, feeding it into that fun factory, using cookie cutters, that kind of thing. Now, Play-Doh's kind of babyish, so you can use something like Sculpey, which is a harder texture for a stronger hand, and you can make artwork with Sculpey. So you're going to use that with an older person, an older kid, for more of an art kind of oriented activity. Gardening is fabulous, a great way to get the hands in there, get in touch with nature, and really start to reduce some of those tactile issues. Now, you're going to accommodate the sensitivity. I'm not going to force a young child who cannot endure finger paints to put, I'm not going to force that person to put her hands in finger paint. That's not acceptable. A person can use gloves or a paintbrush. Believe me, they're going to end up with paint on their hands anyway. That's fine. For an older kid, you know, you can have hand wipes available. Don't let the person get, you know, constantly run to the bathroom to wash hands when he's using glue. Say, you know, you can teach to rub your hands to get the glue to roll off. It's kind of fun. I like to pour glue all over my hands to show that it's not scary, that it's okay. You can have a hand wipe available so that if it becomes intolerable, the person feels a sense of control and can just wipe hands quickly. So, you know, as a parent, as a therapist, we're always trying to figure out, you know, when do I push my child forward and when do I protect my child? And that is a question that's never going to go away. And you have to make peace with the ambiguity of that. And it changes from day to day, hour to hour. Okay, hand fidgets are wonderful. They help to focus energy and desensitize the hands. I like to use koosh balls, any kind of squeeze balls like the ones on the lower right. Tangle toys are fabulous. Tangle is the one on the lower left. Check out the Tangle Juniors. They have a little clip that you can add to a key ring, a book bag, a belt loop, and those are really good for as a hand fidget. Rubik's Cubes are wonderful as a hand fidget. I have never been able to do a Rubik's Cube successfully, but I love playing with them. And it can be a really good way to focus a hand fidget into an object like this and can be used at meeting time, at circle time, during reading, during transitions, any time like that. If a person is going to tend to throw a hand fidget, you can sew a fabric tab into a pocket. You can attach it to a belt loop or a belt and make it something that's always handy. So lots of hand fidgets out there. I also like bubble wrap. Vibration can be really soothing. On the lower left is the Vibramat that can be used under a beanbag, under a chair, under a bed, that it adds soothing vibration. It's a wonderful thing. You can also take a vibrating toy like that vibrating snake that's wrapped around that young lady's neck. It can be worn that way, but you can also just attach that to a crib or an office chair or anything for that matter, and that can add a little vibration. The upper left is the Squiggle Wiggle Writer, and that's a really fun pen that's very soothing and organizing, and if a person can learn how to control that pen, they can learn how to control any writing tool. It's a lot of fun. And if the person is struggling with handwriting practice, sometimes to pull out something like the Squiggle Wiggle is really great because you can prep the hand with really great sensory input and then make writing a lot of fun by using that pen itself. The upper right is Ellie the Elephant, and that's an oral jiggler. It's an oral vibrator that can be used to desensitize the mouth. And, of course, there's something that every family uses on the lower right, and that's a washing machine. Some kids just love sitting on those washing machines and getting their vibration that way. Big issue for a lot of kids is clothing. Happily, in the forward to Raising a Sensory Smart Child, Temple Grandin talked about the horror of wearing itchy wool petticoats as a young child. And we've come a long way from wearing itchy wool petticoats under our dresses, ladies. So thank goodness for that. And there are a lot of smart companies out there who are manufacturing just the most wonderful clothing. There are great seamless socks out there now, like from Smart Knit Kids and from Soft Clothing. There's super soft underwear and even petticoats from Hannah Anderson, and that company is great for boys, girls, and adults. There are fantastic companies like Terry's Kids and again, Soft Clothing, who have come out with adorable, super soft, seamless clothing for children. And there's a lot of softer options out there now for adults, too. What you want to do with any piece of clothing, remember that so much of our clothing now, unless you're buying organic, super soft clothing from companies such as Terry's Kids, you definitely want to pre-wash the clothing, especially if you're buying clothing that is manufactured overseas. Because what they do is they manufacture the clothing and then ship it over, and they're hoping the bugs don't get at it. So they're spraying it with insecticides quite often. And there's all kinds of sizing and chemicals and things like that that you really want to wash out before you present it to your sensitive child, or for yourself for that matter. You don't want those chemicals. So you're going to wash multiple times to remove sizing and pesticides. Put your hand inside the clothing. Feel around for tags and labels and itchy threads that are used to sew on these things. Cut all that stuff out. Avoid elastic waistbands and cuts and cuffs. Go for those seamless socks and tights. And if you're in a pinch and your child or you're having a problem, turn them inside out. And that gets the seams a little bit away from you. And often there's some extra lumpage from the, that's not the technical term, obviously, but it's kind of lumpy where the seam is, and sometimes you can snip away that and reduce some of that lump. One of the problems with clothing is often dry skin, so you really want to moisturize. You want to exfoliate the skin and moisturize the dry skin. Add fish oil to the diet or flaxseed oil supplements, and that really helps with some of the clothing sensitivity. I have a lot more on sensory smart clothing choices on the Sensory Smart's website. I have an article that was in the Autism Digest magazine, and I have links to the specialty clothing sites that I mentioned, as well as many others. Weighted products. Okay, they can promote calm and self-regulation and help the person focus. There are a lot of different adorable weighted wearables out there. There are vests, there are collars, lap pads, blankets, there's belts, the miracle belt is fabulous. There are weighted hats, little ankle weights that can be worn. There are even costumes that can be worn. And the general thought with the weighted products is that they can be worn typically for about 20 minutes on, 20 minutes off. Now, this is the classic advice because the brain habituates to sustained input. So by taking it on and off, you're keeping the brain kind of alerted and aroused to that input. Now, we know that people with sensory issues, particularly those with autism, are not processing sensory input quite the same way. So you actually want to experiment a little bit and do this under the supervision of an OT with the wearing time. You may find that it's really soothing and calming for an hour or even 2 hours before the person habituates. Same thing with the weight. The typical advice is 5 to 10% of body weight. So for a 50-pound child, that's going to be, you know, maximum 5 pounds of weight. Well, again, work with a knowledgeable therapist. You may want to use heavier weight for it to be effective. You know, I've spoken with autistic adults who really want 30% of their body weight. That's what makes them feel good. So there is some variability here. Remember that sensory processing skills are so variable, and it's different for each person. You want to be especially careful with children, with nonverbal children, with kids who wouldn't be able to physically or cognitively remove something that they find uncomfortable. Certainly a child with any kind of respiratory issues, you want to be especially careful with. And one last thing on the weighted products, if you're following the 20 minutes on, 20 minutes off, or 30 minutes, or whatever timing you get to, don't interrupt the child if he or she is engaged in something that is productive and wonderful to remove the vest or put on the vest. If your child is engaging in some back and forth conversation or doing a project, don't worry about the vest. Take it off, put it on later when the activity is over. Okay, compression garments. Compression garments also can calm and organize. And because the fabric is dynamic, meaning that it stretches in all different directions, there's less habituation, so it can be worn all day. Some easy resources for that are Lycra bicycle clothing from any sporting goods store. The Under Armour brand is really great, nice and snug fitting, and you want to get a tight size so that it's nice and snug. Control top tights for girls or even boys, underneath clothing, give some compression in the lower abdomen, and that's often important and reassuring and calming and organizing. Even snug leggings or leotards can be very, very helpful. So you want to investigate the compression types of clothing. A really amazing product out there is called the SPIO garment. That stands for Stabilizing Pressure Import Orthosis, and that's available from spioworks.com. And what I love about this is that take a look at those different products. They cover more of the body. The leggings on the left side go way up over the belly button, like up to the rib cage. So that's giving compression all the way up, not just at the hips and legs. The vest, second from left, goes, often the compression vests stop at the hips. This one goes all the way down. It's like a onesie, and it goes underneath, between the legs and snaps on. So the person is getting compression, entire compression proximally, throughout their trunk and pelvis. the long sleeve shirt goes all the way down over the wrists and over the hips, and then there's a compression glove, and that feels unbelievably great on the hand. It gives lots of compression. And what are these things good for? It's good for providing stability and a sense of security, especially if the person has low muscle tone, which so many people on the spectrum have. And it's just good for body awareness as well. Think about when you go to the dentist and they put that lead bib on, and how I find it extremely reassuring and calming. It just kind of grounds me into the chair and helps me know where my body is when I'm not exactly happy at being at the dentist's office. What's also really cool about the SPIO products is that they may be covered by your insurance if it's a medical necessity. And the SPIO website even helps you do that. They give you sample letters for getting insurance coverage on that. It's great. Now, the stuff I'm showing you here, smaller sizes, they are available in sizes for older children and even adults. And you do want to consult with an occupational or physical therapist for use and fit. Let's move on now. Let me take a sip of water now that we're on oral needs. Let's move on to the mouth. Remember that we all, from infancy, comfort ourselves through our mouth. Oral comforts ease anxiety and promote self-regulation. So a lot of people with sensory issues, and particularly those on the spectrum, put a lot of things in their mouth, or eat quite a lot, or do things with their mouth in an effort to self-comfort. So how are we going to meet those needs? Well, water is a great way of doing that. Good, clean, pure, purified, beautiful water. Drinking that all day long is probably the single best thing that you can do for your child or for yourself. Keeps you hydrated, keeps the brain happy. Short of water, other liquids through a straw or even a sports bottle are really great. Gum is a fabulous thing for reorganizing, for getting input into the joints of the mouth, the jaw joint, the teeth joints. All of that input is really good. So chewing gum is great. If we're dealing with a gluten-free, casein-free diet, there's something called Glee gum, G-L-E-E gum, and that's on your lower left on your slide. And that's super for someone on a special diet. Let's see, fruit leather is good, crunchy snacks like those pretzel sticks on the slide, or healthy snacks like the green beans on your right-hand corner of your slide. Those are actually from Trader Joe's, and I've been using those for kids who absolutely will not eat anything green, and these are kind of like green bean potato chips, and kids are... and adults are really open to trying these because they're more like potato chips than anything else. And that gives a good crunch that meets a lot of oral needs. In terms of non-food items, there are so many products out there that just weren't out there years ago when so many of my my friends on the spectrum were children. There is the pencil topper. The lower left side, it's just a little plastic chewable cap that goes onto a pencil, and this little guy on the slide is chewing on it, and it's helping him to keep focused, and that's a good thing. The little girl with that pink necklace in her mouth is using a piece of jewelry. Now, I tend to not use the jewelry necklaces. I stick with the bracelets. I'm just not real comfortable putting things around a child's neck. So you have to use your judgment, obviously. But again, it's a great chewable item. So instead of sitting down at school and picking up the bottom of her dress and chewing on that, she's going to chew on her little chewy bracelet or necklace. The Chew Ease, that is the middle of your screen, and it has a pink, in this picture, it has a pink hook and kind of an orangey cord, and then again, that's that plastic tube. And I love the Chewies. It comes in different colors. I've actually only seen it in person with a black clip and a blue cord. What I love about that is that you can clip it onto pants or a jacket or any piece of clothing, and it's there and available if the person needs it. And it's kind of cool looking. It doesn't look babyish. The fellow up on the top right is wearing a kid companion item, and that's a big boy, and that's an acceptable thing for someone of any age. He's using that as a zipper pull. It's also available as a necklace with a pull-away cord, so that eliminates the risk of choking. The bottom right is Dr. Bloom's chewable jewels. Those come in all different shapes, sizes, and colors. Again, the cord can be tied in a way that's pull away if it's tugged on. Sometimes a parent will wear a Dr. Bloom's item, and a young child can chew on that. You know, an infant can chew on that. I have all of these items that I've been showing you today on the Sensory Smarts website under Toys and Equipment. So if you are having trouble finding any of that, you can find it there. You are also going to want to meet oral respiratory needs, and that means breathing deeply. We often teach people to calm themselves down by breathing. So what happens is the person, we say, breathe three times, and the person goes, and that just is inhaling, and that's the person starts to hyperventilate. That is not useful and calming. So I teach children and adults, parents, to breathe deeply but focus on the exhale. So the breathing sounds more like this, right? So there's a loud exhale, and that is what's calming. And it helps to use whistles and blow toys, blowing up balloons, really focuses on the exhale. People of all ages love blowing bubbles, again, all requiring exhale. Taste and smell sensitivity issues. I showed you Ellie the elephant earlier. This is also Ellie with Wally the alligator. And that can help to desensitize the mouth. Remember that the mouth is also lined with skin. So sometimes when a child or a person is having difficulty with self-limited eating, very few items the person is willing to eat, it's a textural issue, so you want to desensitize the mouth, and that also needs to happen. That can also happen with a vibrating toothbrush. Use a predictable pattern for going into somebody's mouth. It's really invasive, and recognize and respect that it's really, really hard to open up your mouth. You know, try doing it to someone else in your family, or have someone in your family go into your mouth. It's unbelievably invasive feeling. So you want to start to use predictable patterns for going into that mouth. And in the section on toothbrushing and raising a sensory smart child, we tell you how to do that. In terms of the picky eating, you do want to see our book because we have a rather large section on that very common issue. But just really quickly, in terms of adding new food choices, you want to select one new food to work on. So pick one item. You know, I'll have a client say, I'll have a client pick which fruit do you want to someday be able to eat? And for some reason, people usually pick bananas, and that's the food we're going to work on. And I may need to introduce it dozens of trials. They may need to watch me eat it for a long time just to get used to the sight of a banana and the smell of a banana before they're willing to even touch it with a finger. So it's a process. We have a lot on it in the book. Dips can also go a long way. If your child loves cheese sauce but won't try broccoli, he may be willing to taste a little bit of broccoli, especially if you call it a tree, by dipping it into the beloved cheese sauce. You want to avoid empty calories. You know, veggie booty is not a vegetable. And so you want to have hunger going on, but you don't want to frustrate the person that you're helping. So you don't want to have the person be starving and then provide food that the person cannot tolerate. Let, you know, get the nutrition into the person and then work on the food choices separately. Okay? And again, see the book. Let's talk quickly about scent. Scent is a fascinating thing because it travels directly to the limbic system of the brain. That's a very primitive part of the brain, and it can trigger protective responses. And that's why sometimes smell can be one of the hardest things for people to tolerate. Sometimes people crave a huge amount of smell. There was a child that I used to work with who would throw up every time the parents pulled into the gas station. This is back when gas was a little bit stinkier. And it was the smell of the gas that he couldn't bear. I recently consulted with a family that has a 21-year-old with autism who craves garbage and manure smells. He would dump over any garbage can or dumpster and then sniff the garbage. If someone just fertilized their lawn with anything containing manure, this kid was in heaven because he would just go and smell it all and just really love it. So that's some real sensory seeking, right? What I do with the smell issues is I pre-treat the nose. And remember that scent, that things that smell are actually particulate matter that sit on the nose hairs. So I want to pre-treat that. And I can use essential oil, Vicks VapoRub, or something called Noxo Balm. And it's called Noxo Autism Alleviation Balm. And I have to admit, I haven't gotten my sample yet. I'm fascinated by it. Google it. Check it out. I don't think it's going to alleviate the autism, but I think it's going to alleviate some of the smell issues. Anyway, with the essential oil, I will present like maybe 5 different aromas, and I'll have my client smell the different aromas and select one that he or she likes. And for some reason, they almost always like sweet orange oil. And I'll mix some of the sweet orange oil up with a carrier oil that you can get at the health food store. Usually it's sweet almond oil, so I'm mixing the sweet almond oil base with the sweet orange oil or peppermint or whatever the person likes, mixing that up together, and then we'll put a little bit under the nostrils. So we're pre-treating the nostrils. So those little hairs inside the nose get full of the beloved smell so that when it's time for the nasty smell that the person can't tolerate, it really is pretty well masked. For the person who's sensory seeking those manure smells or poop or whatever, you're going to give them more intense smells, like maybe the Vicks VapoRub, and pre-treat that way. So you're meeting those smell needs, the smell-seeking needs, without engaging in really unacceptable activities like dumping over garbage cans. So, and again, using these oils and smells are really useful for things like going to the supermarket and going to the zoo, that kind of thing. Okay. So I'm going to move quickly through some of the rest of this so we can get to any questions. You want to rule out vision issues. Now, the person with visual sensory problems may easily pass a school screening. Remember, or even a pediatrician's office screening for that matter. They need a thorough vision and visual processing evaluation by a qualified vision care provider. So again, the school screenings are not acceptable. They do not do a thorough job unless you've been fortunate enough to have a vision care specialist come into your school or center to do the screening. That's fine. But otherwise, you want the proper evaluation to find someone who's qualified in your area. Go to covd.org. That's the College of Optometrists and Vision Development. You can enter your zip code, and it'll pop up the nearest developmental optometrist who can evaluate your child or young adult or adult for that matter. If you want to learn more about the vision issues, go to pavevision.org, P-A-V-E, vision.org. Now, visual issues are really a problem with people on the autistic spectrum. And you know what? They're a problem for me, too. I took this child. This is Toys R Us in Times Square here in New York City. I became quite overwhelmed, and this is my lovely autistic client. And she guided me through. She kept me safe and calm. It was a wonderful day. And I managed to keep myself regulated. What you want to do, remember that too many visuals overwhelm. I go into some homes, and it's so lovely how many toys parents get for their kids. But when the living room looks like an explosion of toys, looks like Santa's workshop, this is not so great because it's visually overwhelming. So take away some of those toys. Leave out maybe 10 of your child's favorite toys, and that will encourage engagement and prolonged play with each toy. Actually, during my sessions, there's only one item out at a time, unless by design I want to have conflicting visual stimuli. In the classrooms have too much stuff up on the walls in general. When I work with kids in their homes and we sit down at their desk to do some work, it's, again, an explosion on the desk, and that's not conducive to visual and cognitive focus. Worksheets with too much stuff on it can just make people shut down and not be able to show what they know because there's too much on the page. So you can mask some of that stuff on a worksheet. Hopefully the teacher can simplify some of those worksheets, or at the very least you can cover certain parts of the worksheet so there's not so much to look at, so the person can focus on what they're doing. Now, many people on and off the spectrum are super light sensitive. I personally can see and hear fluorescent lighting. I hate it. Not so bad with the newer lights, but still not great. I always counsel people to replace, if possible, that fluorescent lighting with full spectrum, incandescent, or halogen lighting. If that can't be done, use only fresh fluorescent tubes. They flicker less. If you can't get around that, use sunglasses, a hat with a visor that shields against the downcast glare, also outdoors the sun. Install dimmer switches when possible. I know that's really difficult with fluorescent lighting. You know, I turn off the fluorescents altogether and put on a floor lamp if I can. If you're unable to replace the fixture type, let's say we're talking about in a school, you can add a light diffuser, and I'll show you a couple of these. This one's real, sorry, here I am. This one is very inexpensive. You can get it on Amazon. You can get it on the Sensory Smarts website. It's a classroom light filter, super inexpensive. What you can't do is take a piece of fabric or a piece of paper and tack it on over a fluorescent light fixture. It's not safe. It's a fire hazard. This is called U.S. Sky Panels. These are really gorgeous. They're kind of pricey, but how beautiful is that? How nice would that be in a classroom? And these are cozy shades that also diffuse the light and, sorry about that, diffuse the light. It doesn't reduce the sound of the lighting all that much, but it's a start. Let's talk about sound sensitivity. If a person says that their ears hurt, believe them. You know, what I hate to see is, you know, someone says, oh, it's too loud in here. And someone who doesn't understand the person with sensory issues says, no, it's not. Well, the truth is it is. It is too loud for a lot of people, and their ears do hurt. Most of us start to hear at 0 to 15 decibels of sound. The person with hypersensitive hearing can hear at negative 15 decibels of sound. So that means they have a lot more sound coming in. So it can be a volume issue. It can be a frequency issue. It might be high frequencies are problematic or low frequencies are problematic. It may be a foreground, background, auditory discrimination kind of a problem. Like you may have a problem listening to your friend when you're in a crowded, noisy restaurant. So believe it if someone complains about their ears. If the person is nonverbal, if you see a lot of ear swiping, or just, you know, the most obvious, hands over the ears, you know there's an auditory issue. You want to investigate ear infections as well as the possibility of migraines if it's kind of a sudden issue for the person in question. You want to protect the child or yourself or your adult child from painful sounds. Earplugs are fine. There are earplugs right in your local drugstore. There are ones that are good for kids, ones that are good for adults. There are noise-reducing headphones, earmuffs. If it's just a mild issue, just a fluffy terry cloth headband over the ears can help. A white noise machine or just a white noise CD popped into a boombox can help. A quiet work area is important. You can install double pane windows. We do that here in the city. Because the apartments right on the avenues can be so noisy, and adding sound-absorbing materials can really, really help with the sound issues. I teach my clients self-advocacy. Don't act out. Take action. Tell someone you're having a problem. Grab your earphones. Grab your earplugs. Don't act out. Do something. And then, of course, you're going to build skills. There are great therapeutic listening programs out there that can help with some of these auditory issues. Then if there are particular sounds that are problematic, you're going to desensitize through daily life exposure. You can also record the sound and then listen to it in a safer environment so the person can really explore that sound and decide if it really is awful and scary. The sound ease CDs are great. There's recorded sounds like toilets flushing, dogs barking, babies crying, telephones, vacuum cleaners, all the sounds that people are so commonly afraid of. And a quick note about the toilets, if the person is frightened by automatic flush toilets, carry some Post-its with you, pull out a Post-it, stick it over the sensor, the toilet won't flush unexpectedly. All right, so here's a couple of earplugs. And earmuffs, some cute little earmuffs. All right, you may or may not know about the sensory-friendly film series from the Autism Society. These are great. They're all over the country at this point. The house lights are turned up, the volume's turned down. You can bring your own snacks, and singing and dancing and that kind of thing is perfectly welcome. Okay, a quick note on sleep, and there's lots on the website and a lot in the book on sleep. I know that people with autism have so many different problems with sleep. There's some basic sleep hygiene issues that can be followed, like establishing and sticking to a bedtime routine, including on the weekends and holidays. You want to establish a regular sleep-wake cycle. Start your bedtime routine up to an hour in advance. Recognize that part of the routine may need to include some roughhousing to get the yayas out before the body can sort of reach that lowered state of arousal needed for sleep. Consider the sensory needs. Does the person really need a little more light or more dark? Is white noise necessary? Does the person need some oral comforts? What's going on in terms of the textures of the linens, the bed linens, the blanket weight? A lot of times kids can drift off to sleep a little bit more easily. If you just quickly review things that happened today and what will happen tomorrow. Of course, you want to avoid caffeine, which is hidden in some colas. Some medications. And you want to talk to your pediatrician about melatonin, to your psychopharmacologist about the impact and timing of any medications your child is taking. There's a lot more available, again, in the book about sleep, and I'm sorry to rush on that piece here. Finally, my book is available, is available in bookstores, websites, all over the place, as well as the DVD. And you can also read my articles in the Autism Asperger's Digest magazine and sometimes in SI Focus magazine. So also, if you're on Facebook, please join our Facebook page. It's the Raising a Sensory Smart Child Facebook page, and Nancy Pesky and I are posting constantly on that. So that's a lot of fun. And do visit the website for free webinars, downloadable articles, checklists, a lot more tips and resources. So we have some time for questions now.
Okay. We did have someone ask, what is the website again for the sensory clothing, the SPIO?
Okay. What I've done, the SPIO is at SPIO Works, S-P-I-O. WORKS.com. But what I've done is, if you go to the Sensory Smarts website and click on, that's under helpful websites, you'll find specialty clothing. And I have links to all that on the Sensory Smarts website.
Okay. It sounds like a very comprehensive website.
We've done a lot of work on it.
A lot of information there.
Yeah.
So that's where people really should go first.
That's a great place to go. And go to all the different pages. Each month I write and post new tips that are applicable to that month. I've put a lot of articles on there and videos. There's so much on that website.
Wonderful. Okay, anyone that's calling on their telephone can press *2 to alert me that you have a question, and I will put you through to our presenter. So if you're calling in, press *2 to ask a question. And in the meantime, I'll go to some of the typed-in questions that we've had submitted through the website.
Great.
Carmen from La Mesa asks, I have an 18-year-old daughter with Asperger's syndrome. She is sensitive to noise to the point of wearing earplugs to school every day. She is attending college in the fall. How can she overcome this sensitivity? Any pointers?
Okay. If she's wearing earplugs, oh, hi, Carmen. Thanks for your question. First of all, how exciting for your daughter to be going to college. That's just fantastic. And you're right, this is going to be an issue in school. So you want to start to accommodate a little bit more. Let me just make some notes so I remember to cover everything. Okay. The earplugs are great. I'm a little bit concerned that she's wearing them for too many hours a day. What happens when you wear earplugs all day long is that the brain starts to recalibrate. The brain habituates to the muffled sound, so they don't become as effective. So you want to start to do some of that on and off wearing of the earplugs. I also strongly recommend that your daughter participate in a therapeutic listening program. Now, she needs to do this with an occupational therapist or a speech-language pathologist or someone else who has received in-depth training and certification in using one of these programs. Some of these programs include integrated listening systems, ILS. There's also therapeutic listening. There's also one called the Listening Program. There's REI. There's a bunch of them out there. And you want to do your research there. But what these programs are all about are reducing some of the auditory hypersensitivity and increasing the ear and the brain's ability to tolerate a wide variety of sounds. So, again, you're protecting and you're also increasing the underlying ability.
Okay. We do have a caller with her hand raised. Let me unmute her so she can ask her question.
Hi, I'm Jennifer from Wisconsin, and I'm actually also an occupational therapist, so this was really, really great.
Hi,
great
Jennifer.
Great information. You did a really great job with all the website and everything. The question I have is my daughter has got a pretty complicated medical history, but also has autism, is nonverbal, and we've over the years tried a lot. We do a lot of sensory. It's a lot of, you have a lot of reminders there of things that I have neglected and things. But one thing that I was wondering when we were talking about noise factor and I was listening in what you're saying about therapeutic listening. You know, we've tried that over the years, and she just will not tolerate the earphones. She likes listening to music, but I haven't been able to get her to really engage in that therapeutic listening, and I really do feel like noise factor-wise, it's an area that she's super sensitive with, and as she's getting older, she is getting overwhelmed more in those, you know, crowded and loud environments.
How old is she now?
She's going to be 15. And she is nonverbal, and she also has a severe seizure disorder, which complicates factors a lot, you know, when we're, you know, doing some of these modalities and such. But I'm just wondering if you could speak to that at all.
Well, it is complicated, obviously, and there are no easy answers here. I'm curious as to the last time that you tried.
It's been a while.
Kind of listening. It's been a while. So
yeah, it's been a while. Yeah.
Okay. I mean, your daughter does she have some self awareness that this is an issue for her?
She can't
verbalize it.
No, she won't really show me in that way. But what she does is she's gotten a lot more controlled now. But she used to bolt out of situations where, you know, it was just too much and she couldn't handle it all. Now it's as soon as I stand up, okay, now she's leaving. So she's a little bit more controlled where she's not bolting, but, you know, you can tell it's taking every ounce of effort for her to be in that environment.
Right, right.
Yeah.
It might be worth trying again.
Okay.
Right, now that she's a bigger girl, she may be able to tolerate it. Part of her objection might be the headphones.
Yeah, yes.
Right? So, she enjoys other kinds of music. Maybe you want to start her with the headphones, with the kind of music that she enjoys.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I tried that.
So you may need to just not do the headphones right now. I mean, as an OT, you've probably tried every trick in the book with the headphones.
So I have.
You've done that, we're going to let go of that idea. And we're going to think about other ways to do it. You can do music over speakers. Now, it is not going to be as powerful as, you know, directly in the inner ear. The sound waves have to travel through space.
Sure.
You can start to try some of these programs over the speakers. You can start to play some sound games with her. Are there any particular sounds she can't stand? If there are
No, but she's starting to get a little bit more reactive to even the sound of our voices sometimes. It's just getting to be so much for her, especially when she's, you know, having more seizures or, you know, she's in that hormonal stage where she's getting her period. And so she's a lot more emotional and sensitive during that time, which is, coming pretty often for her. So it's becoming kind of running into each other. So it's becoming really problematic for us.
Yeah. Well, so there's also the emotional and the behavioral piece going on.
Right.
I mean, in this kind of case, you are going to keep working on building the underlying skills. You do want to find out if there's anything going on with her ears. You know, if she's getting a lot of ear infections, is there something organic going on with the inner ears? this may be one of those situations where, remember I was saying before, it's like, mm-hmm. when do you protect, when do you push forward? Maybe you need to do more protection right now. You know, and get her calm, especially during those heightened times where she just, it's just overwhelming. That's when
we've
the noise canceling
We just kind of go into the mode of, you know, doing less talking and more visual support and some of those types of things and not as much yelling in the house and, you know, trying to do that just common sense stuff. But it isn't common sense when, you know, that's the way your household runs. So, you know, we've been trying some of those things. Now, when you talked about
I was saying when the sensory load is overwhelming, you have to reduce the sensory load.
Mm-hmm.
That's the first thing you do.
Right.
And you build from there.
Well, and the ideas that you had for the CDs that would go over the wavelet, the speakers,
mm-hmm.
which one that were you speaking of that you could do that with?
Because
I know the listening program. Oh, really?
The therapeutic listening has a whole bunch of these, and that they're more like self-regulatory kinds of CDs. I don't have them at the top of my head.
Yeah, but that's fine. No, I know because I have some of them.
Okay. And a couple of other. HemiSync might also have something like that.
Okay. Very good. Thank you so much.
You're so welcome. All right. Good luck.
Thanks.
Before I take our next caller, I want to ask you how time sensitive you are. Do you need to really cut it off right at 12:30, or can I extend it 15 minutes?
We can extend 15 minutes.
Okay. Thank you very much. I will do just that, and we will take the next call. Hello, caller, are you there? Hello?
Hello?
Hello, did you have a question today? That's okay.
I had you on mute. Yeah, I did. I have a daughter who has autism. She's 7. She was diagnosed at 5. She never showed any sign of sensitivity to noise. It's just recently developed, I would say on her 7th birthday. Is it a normal process for kids to later develop sensitivities, like at a later age? And it's kind of weird because it's not a consistent thing. Some days she'll hear sounds and she's fine, and then some days she's not. And then some sounds she's fine with, like if it's something she likes, she'll kind of turn it up, and if it's something she doesn't like, she'll turn it down. So I don't know if it's a sensitivity or she just doesn't like it.
Aren't kids confusing? You know, every child is different. Every adult is different, obviously. And, it takes so much detective work to really figure this stuff out. What's going on with this child?
Right.
And it takes a lot of detective work. So it's really hard for me to say what's going on with your child. But I can tell you typically I see a pattern that starts very early on of auditory sensitivity. Remember that kids start to hear when they're in the womb. That's when auditory processing begins. So to me, it's rather unusual for it to start at age 7, and I'm curious if there's any ear infection or any kind of organic ear issue. I always look at the organic physical first. You know, can the person see well? 50% of the kids that I work with have undiagnosed vision problems. Can the child hear well? Is there maybe a little fluid in the ear? Is there anything going on in the ear itself? So that's the first thing that I look at when I hear sudden. But we know that kids can suddenly decide things. You know what? I don't like that. So, and it can seem kind of arbitrary to us, but that's just the way it is. So I'm not saying it's definitely something physical that's going on. I'm just raising that possibility. So you're telling me that some sound she's fine with and others...
Music.
Give me some for instances.
Like, when she loved music when she was young. That was our big thing with her. She would sing. She would listen to any music. Now, when we put on music, now she'll cover her ears. And it's weird. Some songs she might like, she'll sing with the song but cover her ears as she's singing. So mm-hmm. I'm like, okay, are you like the song, but you're covering your ears, so I'm confused by that. And then other times when maybe she's playing, say, like a video game or something, and she likes the music, she'll turn it up, like louder, where I would think she'd be turning it down.
Right.
So it's like we're like totally confused, like, okay.
Yeah, you know, there's a difference between, first of all, recorded music
mm-hmm.
and live music. Very different sensory experiences. And there's a difference between listening to music and singing the music, right? Because there's all the bone conduction. You're hearing
right.
yourself. So it's like she wants to hear herself sing, and she can't if the music's on, right?
So she's singing and then covers her ears to hear herself but not the music?
Right.
Oh.
I know it's confusing. Try it yourself. Try it yourself. Because we hear within our own heads.
Right.
A lot of hearing. So let her explore. Is this interfering with her everyday life? And you don't have to answer that right away.
I'm thinking that.
You know, think about it. Or is she at a stage where she is exploring sound? Sound is very powerful and very pervasive. So she may just be starting to explore different sounds.
Yeah, and there are some issues, like if we go to, like, an amusement park,
mm-hmm.
now with all the noise, now she's constantly just, like, hands over her ears walking around, where I get that because it is loud and there's a lot
right.
of stuff going on.
Right.
But this is, again, something that she's never had a problem with before.
Mm-hmm.
It's all,
mm-hmm.
like, all of a sudden, like, oh, it's too loud.
Yeah. Well, it's that multisensory process.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
You know,
that comes later or it can develop later.
Yeah,
as they become more aware.
Absolutely. You know, as the demands increase, when she was at home with you, mm-hmm. things were pretty much, you know, consistent, predictable noise. You were doing pretty much, the same old boring things day after day.
Mm-hmm.
And now she's in school and going to amusement parks, and there's all this stuff that's unpredictable. And, and increased academic demands and demands for behavior. And sometimes that's, you know, it just becomes too much. And I want you to start keeping that behavior log that I mentioned.
Okay.
Write down the day, time of day, what she ate, what she reacted to, how she reacted. Was it a high-pitched kind of a sound, or was it a lower kind of a sound? If she's getting OT, talk to your OT. Get your OT involved. If she's getting any kind of speech therapy, talk to the speech-language pathologist. And get more people involved. And have some fun with this stuff, you know?
Yeah.
Sit together and let her be in control of the CD player. You know, what songs do you like? Do you like that song? What if we turned it louder? You know, what if we turned it lower? You know, I like this song. Do you like that song? And listen to nature sound CDs. And explore sound together. That's part of learning.
Yeah. It's funny because we were going to do like a music therapy with her, and then all of a sudden she developed the sensory issue, the sounds. I'm like, oh no!
Right before or when you?
Well, before.
Okay.
Yeah, right before we, because she loved music so much, and I thought, well, let's do music therapy, and then now.
Right.
Boom, no
music. Yeah.
That's kind of weird.
Work with an occupational therapist if you're not already on this.
Yeah, we are.
Okay.
Thank you so much.
You're so welcome. Good luck.
Thank you, caller.
Yeah.
Okay, anyone else that's calling in on their phone, you can press *2 if you'd like to ask a question. I'm going to go to the ones that have been coming in through the website so we can maybe knock out just a couple of those. There's a lot of praise coming in for you.
Okay.
We have a question coming in from India. It says, hi, is there a way to know when a child or an adult is hyper-aroused, which might lead to a shutdown?
India. Hello, India. And thank you for asking a question. You can tell when someone is hyper-aroused. Quite often you'll see a lot of stimming kind of behaviors, hand flapping, maybe increased verbal utterances or whatever kind of stims the person tends to do. You'll see some increased, sometimes you'll see increased motor activity. You may see the person sort of change color. So the person may blanch, may become more pale, or may start to redden in the face. And then the person may start to shut down because they're hyper-aroused, and then that person just seems tuned out, less eye contact than usual, less engagement than usual. So what you want to try to do is avoid that kind of situation. You don't want the person to become hyper-aroused, and that's where that behavior journal comes in, because you want to avoid that. You want to avoid the situations that create the hyper-arousal. You also want to take a look at sensory diet, how to feed the nervous system's need for sensory input all day long so that the person stays on an even keel, keeps that optimal state of arousal throughout the day. Hope that helps.
Very nice. A question from Sacramento. My nephew can chew through any commercial chewy product. My sister has resorted to dog toys, but we would love to know of other alternatives.
Wow. Well, I would avoid the dog toys, the dog chew toys, without doubt, especially check to see if they are made in China and are painted, and 'cause you're running the risk of the lead-tainted paint. So no more dog toys. I've assumed that you've tried things like chewy tubes and the P's and Q's. I didn't show them in my presentation. Those are probably fairly easy for your person to chew through. I would try something like the Chew-Ease. That is an intensely tough plastic, and it's a safe plastic, relatively safe plastic. You might also want to look into foods for chewing. And because if the person's chewing a lot, that means I'm concerned that they're also swallowing the things that they're chewing up. So the plastic items, if they're swallowing, avoid the plastic items and switch more towards the food items. I'm also, you know, whenever I hear about a strong behavior like that, I have to look at what's driving the behavior. Why is there so much chewing going on? Is there anxiety? That's often what's behind the chewing behaviors. Is there tension in the jaw? Is it possible that there's TMJ going on? Is there difficulty with the bite so that the bite is uncomfortable, the alignment of the teeth? So start to look at what's, you know, not only what you can give that's safe, but what's going on within the person that's underlying the cause. And you may find that some oral sensory techniques are in order here. And you want to work with an occupational therapist who specializes in that. Okay,
nice.
Good luck.
Nick from New York asks, if my daughter doesn't like tight clothing, should I be trying compression garments?
Hi, Nick. The theory behind we don't force things. I don't force things on anybody. If your daughter has a preference for clothing that is not snug or tight in any way, you don't have to give it to her. She's told you she doesn't like it, so we're not going to give her something that she doesn't like. So definitely go for the softer, looser kinds of clothing. I love Terry's Kids that I've mentioned and soft clothing because they have softer, looser clothing. The compression garments are for people who are organized by that deep pressure input, not for your daughter. I hope that helps.
And maybe one more question. Kelly from Alabama asks, my 7-year-old son is struggling with letting me wash his hair and skin when in the bath or the shower. What can I do to help him with this?
This is a very common problem, and our book, Raising a Sensory Smart Child, has about 1/3 of the book about dealing with these everyday issues that are so hard at home. So hair washing is a big problem for a lot of kids. The first thing you want to do is look at the bathroom environment. Are there a lot of echoes going on in the bathroom? Is it comfortable in environmentally? Is there enough sound-absorbing material, towels, that kind of thing? Because sometimes it's more of the auditory thing that can be distressing for a child. But getting right into the shampooing itself. What a lot of kids object to is getting water in their eyes and about getting soap in their eyes, or maybe it's the smell of the soap. You want to let your child pick the soap, pick the shampoo that he likes best, and get him involved in washing his hair, in washing his body. The bath time is a great time for desensitizing the skin. So use a scrubby with lots of nice soap and really scrub down and get your child tactile, comfortable. And when it comes time to wash, to get the shampoo out of the hair, you can have the child cover his eyes with his hand or even with a washcloth right over his eyes so no soap or water goes into his eyes. You can have him tilt his head back, so, and again, shielding the eyes, so that the soap and the water don't go into the eyes. There's a product out there called the Lil Rinser, and I have it on the website, on the Sensory Smarts website, and it's a cup that shields the face. There are lots of different visors, but I really like the Lil, L-I-L, Rinser, and that really protects the eyes and the face. Also think about the towel. Sometimes kids are uncomfortable with bathing and washing and shampooing because of the toweling afterwards. They can't tolerate the toweling off. Experiment with a rougher textured towel versus a softer towel. You may want to preheat the towel by running it in your dryer for a few moments. So it's a nice, fluffy, warm towel that your child steps into. And try to make it fun, lots of tub toys. I love adding in tub tints, which are paints that you can use in the tub. And try to make it more fun. If your child loves music, bring some music into the bathroom and make it a more pleasant experience if you possibly can. And do be sure to check our book because we have pages of tips on exactly this kind of issue, on hair cutting, on clothing, on learning to use the potty, on going to playgrounds and amusement parks, this kind of thing. I hope that helps.
Well, that went fast.
It went so fast. I could keep going, and I loved being here with you today.
I'm so glad you were here. We want to thank you for being with us today. And remember, everyone, this will be replayed again the weekend of our autism conference, April 9th or 10th. So be sure and tune in for the free conference. And there's just so many topics, including this one, that you do not want to miss. I want to remind everyone that if they have any questions or need any more information from Ms. Beal, you can go to sensorysmarts.com and also check out her book, Raising a Sensory Smart Child, Practical Solutions for Real-Life Challenges. I also want to let you know that if you want a transcript of this event, you can join our Spectrum Club. I do this every time, Spectrum Gold Club, by clicking the button on your screen. We will send you a copy of this webinar audio and transcript, plus send you 29 other webinars when you join. Also, tell us what you think. Call us at 877-211-0222.